Hi, this is Helen, and thank you for joining me for a cup of teal. Teal is shorthand for the future of work. It means bringing your whole self to work, a focus on purpose and self-management. And this podcast is a chat over a cup of tea with the people who are making this happen in health, care, and public services. Stories of self-management in action. It felt very significant when Adele was appointed as the chief exec of Mencap. And many of us looked and wondered whether she'd do the same as she was starting to achieve in Cornerstone of moving towards self-management. In this podcast, Adele introduces the big plan, what self-empowered teams are and how they fit into a broader strategy that they're taking forward, and introduces the three Fs, freedom, framework and fundamentals, and how they are being used to think about change in Mencap. Well, it's brilliant now to do my third podcast with Adele. Adele, I can't believe that you've been at Mencap for 2 years now as the CEO. So I'm really excited to hear what you've been doing and what's happened since we were last talking together. So Adele, how are you and what's happening in Mencap?
Well, it's lovely to talk to you again, Helen. Yes, 2 years has just flown by. So the anniversary of my appointment is in January, which will be upon us very quickly. Like a lot of charities and organisations, although nobody can confidently say we're through the COVID pandemic, of course, we do feel in a much more settled place. I look back on the last 2 years and I think how incredible and amazing it is that my colleagues, that people with a learning disability and their families, that our partners, during that awful time when we were, you know, literally dealing with a crisis and trying to respond to national lockdown and all that the pandemic brought with it, that we were able as a collective, as a Mencap family, a Mencap community, to co-create such an ambitious and inspiring and bold new big plan, which I guess is what we're here to talk about today.
Absolutely. The last time I met you in person, I think you'd only been in post for a couple of weeks, and I had the privilege of spending some time with the trustees and yourself. So yes, we were talking about exciting new ideas then. How did that emerge into the big plan? How did you get there?
Well, I guess even before my appointment as chief executive at Mencap, the trustees and some of my now senior colleagues were looking at new models of delivering social care. This obviously impacts particularly on the part of Mencap that is involved with the delivery of adult social care services. Although, as an aside, since my appointment and our conversations have progressed, we are approaching our new ways of working and our transformation as a whole organisation. So we've moved on from thinking this is just something that we want to do in terms of the provision of social care. But yeah, prior to my appointment, I think the trustees were being warmed up, if that's the right expression, to, first of all, I think they acknowledged that Mencap, like a lot of organisations, needed a fresh look at the way that we organised ourselves and how we delivered impact for the people with a learning disability that we're here to serve. There was a little bit of a modernisation agenda, I think, required. We are a large and complex charity. And there was a real sense of excitement, I think, about what is possible when you are a large organisation and you can do something at scale and you have the luxury of having some resources to invest in transformation. It's been quite a challenge at times to bring our trustees with us, because what we want to do isn't without risk. However, I would say that the place that we are now as a charity is that the trustees, the leadership team, our network partners and lots of other people are totally on board and behind the ambitious new big plan.
I love being part of your warm-up act, as you described it before you arrived. That's great. And of course, I was also one of the people that was very, very excited, given what you had achieved with your colleagues in Cornerstone, through local Cornerstone, to what you might work on with colleagues in Mencap. So the big plan, what is it, you know?
Well, our new vision is for the UK to be the best place in the world to live if you have a learning disability, to live a happy and healthy life. As a vision, you know, you can't argue with it, can you? And everyone, when they first hear the new vision, gets right behind it. And of course, you have to unpack a vision statement and say, well, what will it take for the UK to be the best place in the world to live a happy and healthy life if you have a learning disability? And it is so much more than one thing. It's not just a reform of social care, adult social care in our context. It's not just, you know, equality and equal opportunity for everyone who has a learning disability. It's not just about addressing the appalling health inequalities that we see exist, and the list could go on. So our big plan starts from a place of acknowledging that everyone who has a learning disability, of course, is a unique individual human being who has hopes and dreams just like the rest of us. And what type of organisation does MenCap want to be, and how can we best use our resources to help achieve that vision? So the new big plan is quite a change for MenCap. It involves us being less of the doing organisation and more of us playing a role, almost like a catalyst. So the principles behind which we are delivering the big plan are very much rooted in the social model of disability. So looking at people with a disability as having assets and being active citizens in local communities. It's very much focused on asset-based community development and local solutions being led by people with MenCap, supporting them to build their own capabilities and solve their own challenges, if you like. We've brought in the concept of self-empowerment, both in the context of the people we're here to serve, people with a learning disability, and our own workforce. And we want to be a much more agile organisation that can respond quickly. So our strategy, our big plan, is evolutionary. It's not set in stone. So we haven't said this is a five-year plan and these are the themes and these are the things we're going to achieve. It's much more evolutionary so that we can be responsive and very agile in our response to being led genuinely by people with a learning disability and responding to their needs.
So one thing that people have wondered has been, is Adele going to create self-managed teams in MenCap? Is MenCap going to be a self-managed organisation? You're using intentionally different language there, Adele, and putting a very different context around that. What have you learnt about changing language in this arena?
Well, of course, my experience at Cornerstone, and indeed all the research and reading and talking to others that have gone on similar journeys, has taught me many, many things. And I guess MenCap now have the benefit of all of that learning, good and bad, things that went well and things that we could have done much better, or I could have done much better. But I think the use of language is really important. When you introduce the concept of self-management to an organization that is founded and built on traditional hierarchical structures, then before you have the time really to explain the reason why working in this way will deliver better outcomes and more positive impact for the people that you're there to serve, which is obviously the point of the whole exercise, you create anxiety and fear, because people who work in traditional hierarchical organisations, like most of us have done or are doing at the moment, then what you hear when you hear that word or words self-management, you imagine a world without managers. And when, you know, a high percentage of your workforce are in management roles, it causes, I think, unnecessary anxiety before you have the opportunity to actually explain what the concept of self-empowered teams or self-empowered working actually is, and how you're replacing in many ways a culture of management and supervision with a culture of coaching and bringing the best out in people, upskilling the workforce, for example. So we have been determined not to talk about TEAL or not to use the language of self-management, but rather to create a set of design principles for MenCap. They are enhanced levels of trust and increased transparency, which obviously is the culture piece. In terms of structures, they're all about flatter structures and what we're calling rotational leadership. In terms of systems, it's about open data and transparency and collecting the right data and using it in the right way, of course, and devolving access to that data so that decision-making happens in the best place. In terms of processes, that's all around self-service with minimum authorizations and designed by the people who need to use those processes. In terms of governance, which is obviously a big challenge for an organization of our scale, it's around devolving decision-making and what we're calling proportional risk management, which is open to interpretation. And then the last one is finances. So we're following the kind of philosophies of beyond budgeting, and we're trying to have more iterative funding cycles so that we're not bound by, again, that traditional way of budget setting and budget management, so we can be more agile.
That's fascinating. And I love how that encompasses everything. People often don't think about finance until the end when they move in this direction. So the fact that you are thinking about structures and processes and culture and all of that together is wonderful. Tell me about, is it rotational leadership you mentioned then?
Yes, well, I think this is something that we might have borrowed from you, Helen. Obviously, one of the organisations that we've studied and got involved with is the Wellbeing Teams. And we are working as part of a learning network with others who are on a similar journey, including Choice Support, whom I know you know. We had the debate, particularly in the concept of more empowered teams in our adult social care provision, of whether there is a requirement for what would be traditionally called a service manager. And it's back to the original point around language. And certainly one of the learnings from my experience at Cornerstone, and obviously I'm no longer here to speak for Cornerstone, but one of my experiences there was that when our first teams began to work together in a self-empowered way or a more empowered way, more autonomous way, they didn't know what they didn't know. And just not having that service manager, not so much the management role, but the person as part of their team, exposed the organisation and the people that we supported at Cornerstone to a level of risk, not huge risk, but a level of risk. It's really important that you think about leadership instead of management, and you think again about the importance of the coaching role and the importance of training the teams and upskilling them so they can carry out all the tasks in a safe and, you know, person-centered way. So rotational leadership really amounts to a team approach to leadership rather than a one-person approach to leadership, and giving everyone in a team the opportunity to develop their skills, to learn new things and to learn new ways of working, but not putting that kind of leadership role on the shoulders of one person so that they carry all the accountability and responsibility, but rather it's captured within the team.
Oh, wonderful. So sharing leadership and sharing roles within a team. That's brilliant. That sounds really, really exciting. So it's one thing to have an inspiring vision as you've got and to have a clear plan. How do you go from that to actually making it happen? Because there's so much communication requirements around that, as well as the co-creation that you've mentioned. And then how do you start inviting teams or moving teams in that direction?
Well, I think the first thing is to really understand your motivations. This is not an easy task to take on, and there has to be very good reason. It's not for the faint-hearted, and there has to be a purpose if you're going to go through this change. Understand your primary motivations, which in our case are to enhance the quality, the delivery and the personalisation of all of our services, again, not just those in our adult social care provision. To be able to demonstrate impact on the quality of life of the people we support. I mean, that's at the heart of all of this. But we do want to improve the experience of our colleagues to make sure we can attract and retain the very best people within the sector. And of course, that's never been more important when the sector is suffering from, you know, huge staff turnover at the moment and struggling to recruit. One of the important drivers for me, and I know the rest of my team, is to create opportunities to reinvest so that we can pay and reward our staff in the way that in which they should be rewarded without overburdening the system. And because we are a large organisation, we want to contribute at scale to the social care reform agenda. So understanding those motivations is critical. And then where did we start? Well, we are introducing this new model of care and support, which, of course, we hope will result in better outcomes for people. But we want to use our resources in a different way and try and address the whole kind of wider social care reform agenda. So we started by, and we've put a lot more time, effort and resource into the planning and the thinking stage than I ever did at Cornerstone. And that's one of the learnings for me. So we set up a number of work streams and allocated, you know, some resources to these different work streams. We also created a new directorate, which is called the Transformation Directorate. And that also includes people who are working on our evaluation and monitoring framework to make sure we've got that in place. And we created a new leadership team that isn't just people who are the highest paid in the organisation or people with those great fancy job titles like mine, but is actually representative of our workforce. So we have colleagues with a learning disability on that leadership team, as well as other colleague representatives. So that's where we started. We did a lot of work on the design principles, and then probably the most important thing, I think, or one of the most important things, is that we've come up with something called the three Fs: freedom, framework, and fundamentals. And we're using the three Fs in absolutely everything that we do, and we're applying that across the whole organization. And the principle being that if you want to give people more freedom, that you need to provide a framework within which people are clear how they need to operate. And you have to provide them with what we're calling the fundamentals. So that's the work environment. That's the tools they need to do the job, like technology. It's the training that we provide. And in every area of our organization, from our governance and our trustees right down to an individual team and across the whole organization. So this includes all our enabling functions as well, our what would be traditionally called back office functions. We're looking at the three Fs, and it's an exercise. It's a living kind of breathing exercise. You don't do it once and put it away. You keep working on it. And this is the little bit of magic, I think, that's happening in MenCap at the moment, because we're starting to see the transformation happening across the organisation and people thinking and working in a different way.
Oh, that's exciting. So what are you seeing? What are you noticing as people start to embrace the three Fs?
We are piloting what we're calling our local delivery pilots. This is the idea of a more autonomous, self-empowered team working in local communities. We've got 36 teams or 36 services that have volunteered. I'm quite a fan of not imposing this way of working on people. They have to want to work in this way, especially when you're starting afresh. Because it is hard, it's change, it's difficult, and you want people who are really up for giving it a go to be your first teams, if you like. But because of COVID, particularly COVID burnout and the challenges that we're seeing across the sector in terms of recruitment and retention, we're actually just going to start with two pilot teams, which is much less than we had hoped. But that is the right decision under the circumstances. So what we're starting to see in those teams, of course, is the curiosity around how the three Fs work in practice and what that means for a team who don't have access to a service manager any longer. We've appointed coaches and we've appointed what we're calling quality leads. And again, this is some learning from my previous organisation. So that there are people in the organisation who can ensure that during the transition, you know, our quality of provision, which is pretty good overall, it's better than pretty good, doesn't fall or falter. So we're starting to see the three Fs come alive in those teams. And then across the organisation, as I say, we're using it in all sorts of different ways. So we're currently undertaking a governance review, which includes looking at our board committees, our board structure, and also the very important role that the Voices Council plays in our governance. That's people with a learning disability. And we're looking at what does it mean for whole organisation governance? You know, what does the framework need to look like and the fundamentals in order to be a truly empowered organisation? And we're seeing teams using it for things like recruitment processes, So what's the framework that needs to be in place and what are the fundamentals in order to give local teams in local communities much more freedom about values-based recruitment? So I could give you lots of examples, but hopefully that brings it alive a little bit.
I love how you've just described how it would apply to recruitment, and it feels like you've created a framework that enables people to think differently about it rather than a set of do's and don'ts. And one of the things that you were famous for in Cornerstone was, I just have such a vivid memory of what happened to the HR policies and procedures and how you went from a large number to a very small number. Are you making those same kind of changes in HR and L&D and some of what used to be called the back office functions?
Yes, it's early stages, but yes, we are. And that's very much related to the three Fs. So we're looking again at whole organization, and we're saying at a very high level, you know, what are the critical, vital policies and procedures and legal requirements and regulatory requirements that have to sit in that framework? So we're carrying out exactly the same exercise that we did at Cornerstone, where we're looking at all our organisational policies and procedures. We're actually doing it with colleagues who are, you know, who actually have to use the policies and procedures rather than doing it from the centre, and stripping out, you know, those that we don't feel are absolutely essential or necessary or have a direct impact on the people that we support. And we have created something that my colleagues are really excited about, which we're calling Touchpoint. So we've got the heat shield, which those of you who are listening who are familiar with the Fred Leloux and sort of Bertzog way of working will have heard reference to a heat shield, which protects the teams and the operations from the needs of the business. So we've got that in place. But we're also creating something called Touchpoint, which I think is really innovative. And it's a bit like a staff handbook, but that really doesn't do it justice. And it's all obviously available digitally, and it's designed from the user, so the colleague perspective. And the idea there is that, you know, things like policies and procedures and policy statements can be easily accessed when they're most needed. So yes, we are looking at all of that. We're looking at our delegations of authority. We're looking just at our layers and layers of management, and, you know, is there a better way to provide support to colleagues who are working in local communities? And of course, we're involving the people we support and families and other key stakeholders like local authorities, particularly the commissioning authorities and our regulators, including the CQC and the UK government as well, who've shown an interest in the scalability of some kind of innovative new way of working.
Could you tell us a bit more about how people you support and families have been involved? Because again, that's pretty fundamental to your direction of travel about self-empowerment, isn't it?
Right from the word go, we are an organisation that says it's led by people with a learning disability. So we involved people with a learning disability in our work streams right from the word go. And as I've already said, we've got three colleagues with a learning disability who are in our new leadership team. And we have a work stream specifically called or titled Engaging Families and People We Support. We made the decision to obviously communicate the big plan, so the strategy in its entirety, to people we support and families and colleagues and network partners. In fact, a lot of them were involved in its creation, so they didn't just see it first time when, you know, when it was written and published. But again, similarly to the way we approach this at Cornerstone, I feel that at a local level, the person being supported and their family will be most interested when, you know, the local delivery pilots are actually happening in their home or in their community. So the very direct involvement of the people we support will be at that stage. But we are using something called the Personal Outcome Scale as one of our key evaluation methodologies. And again, that has been created with the involvement of people with a learning disability themselves.
Thank you. So two teams are underway, aspirations for another 34 in the new year. When hopefully we talk in a year's time, Idel, where do you hope you'll be then? What are your plans or aspirations, or how do you see this potentially evolving over the next year?
Well, we need to really closely monitor the way in which this theory, which we all can see on on paper has no reason to fail, but we all know that when you try and put it into practice, there are challenges that come with this way of working. So we're going to really closely monitor, and we're very lucky at MenCap that we have superb team who are looking at our evaluation and monitoring framework, who've designed it actually, and the trustees have signed it off. Measuring impact, as you know, is really difficult. So we need to keep up the momentum, because I think those who are looking in at MenCap to see, you know, can we achieve this or not, we need to do it at scale. There are lots of other examples where organisations have successfully worked in this way, but they've not always been scalable. So I think in a year's time, we will need to have a greater number of teams, and importantly, a greater number of more autonomous teams in our enabling functions, in our campaigning work, in our information and advice provision. It's not just through the provision of social care. And we will need to be collecting and actually demonstrating some of the data that we have on whether this works or not. Linked to this whole concept is a very ambitious reward strategy, because you'll know, not just at MenCap, but across the social care sector, particularly in England, most social care workers are getting paid little more than the national minimum wage. And so linked to our investment in the local delivery pilots is a redistributing resources, so that we can reward social care workers much better than they currently are. So some of the financial forecasting of the organisation relies on the local delivery pilots being a success and being embedded into the way that we work. So there's a little bit of pressure there in terms of time, but at the same time, we haven't got a burning platform or a crisis, you know, situation. And I think it's really important that we do it well rather than we do it in a hurry. But we've got to balance that. We've got to balance the momentum and the time to prove the concept with the need to, you know, to invest in the time that it will take, because it's a significant change.
A couple of things that you've mentioned already in terms of what you've learned is about the use of language and the visceral response that self-management can create, certainly in the hearts and minds of managers, and the importance of getting foundations in place. What else would you suggest or want to draw attention to for other people, other organisations who might be interested in moving in this direction?
Well, I think the most important thing is to involve as many people as you can. And by that, I don't mean just colleagues. I also mean, you know, whatever type of organisation you're in, your partners, your stakeholders, in the creation of you know, your strategy or your model, whatever word you want to use for it. Because the more people that are involved and engaged and feel ownership and are inspired by the reasons why you want to make the change, then obviously the better chance of success. And again, I'm not sure I personally always got that right in previous roles. So we spent a lot more time, I spent a lot more time once in post at MenCap, ensuring that lots of people's input to the creation of the big plan and the new model of delivery was there. So that's the first thing. So you're not seen as doing something to people, but rather, you know, involving them. And I think the other one is the importance of communication and language. And, you know, we've had challenges at MenCap since we launched the new big plan. You know, we have had some service managers and other colleagues who can't see their role in the future of the organisation, and therefore, you know, question their value and how much they're appreciated. And we've done everything we can, obviously, to resolve those issues when they've arisen. So I think communication is key and engagement is key, because it's more than just communication, isn't it? It's conversation, it's giving people an opportunity to ask questions, to feel it's okay to raise their anxiety or their fear about the future, and to find a good way of responding to those issues. And the other one is honesty. You know, we have been very honest and very open right from the start of this process. We've held a series of events called MenCap Live, which, of course, Helen, you were one of our speakers. So we've tried to be as open and honest as we can about the reasons why we want to make some transformational change within the organization and, you know, be very clear about the common goals that we hope everybody in the organization can get behind. And actually, the last survey we did internally, I don't have the figures to hand, but we almost had 100% of colleagues who took part in the survey saying they thought this was a great idea. They were right behind it. They loved the new big plan. And yet, when asked a different question about, is this the right time, or how are you personally feeling about the change, we got a very different response. So again, I think it's a sign that, you know, colleagues are behind what we're trying to do, but are worried about the circumstances in which we're trying to bring in change. You know, we're still dealing with a pandemic. We lost employee support and colleagues to the virus. We still have outbreaks. You know, we have recruitment challenges. So they have questioned, is this the right time? So I think the importance of communication, engagement, and language and honesty is probably how I'd sum it up.
Thank you. I mean, for me, it's inspiring, refreshing, and exciting, the approach that you're taking, particularly knitting it with community as well as empowerment and not just moving ahead with self-managed teams. So thank you. I can't wait to have this conversation with you again next year and see where you're up to, and obviously learn from you and what your colleagues in MenCap are doing along the way. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for listening. I'd love to hear your reflections. Please tweet me. I'm at Helen@WBTeams. This podcast is a companion to Open Teams. On this podcast, we share the voices and stories of pioneering organizations in health, care, and public services. And on Open Teams, you can see the documents that they're using. Have a look at openteams.co.uk. And if you're interested in wellbeing teams, please come and find me on LinkedIn, where I share a weekly two-minute film, or my blog site, helensanderson.net. And finally, if you're interested in self-management and need some support along the way, I'd love to hear from you. I'm at helen@wellbeingteams.org. Thank you.